for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 345 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. It's another doubleheader week here at the podcast, and first up is Mark London from Mad Cave Studios, the writer of several tremendous books, including Battle Cats, the upcoming series Knights of the Golden Sun, and my personal favorite, Midnight Task Force, which is in the process of being released from Diamond. We discuss all these good things, including the Mad Cave Studios logo and the series itself, which is a steampunk sci-fi story that I think you're going to enjoy. At least I do tremendously. Then everything wraps up with the return of Frank Martin from Modern Testament. We've talked several times before, and now he's putting out the collected edition of Modern Testament, and there's good news and bad news about that. The bad news is I've been so busy here at the podcast, I haven't had a chance to get this interview up before his Kickstarter completed, which took place this week. The good news is it was successful, and if you want to find out how to get his book, you can go to the website that he lists in the interview. We talk about his very first Kickstarter, as well as the collected edition, and what that means for the future of the franchise, as well as other things he's got going on. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode for sure. So let's get on with the show. I'm talking today with Mark London, a writer and one of the driving forces behind Mad Cave Comics. How are you doing today, Mark?
Good, Wayne. Thank you for having me.
It's good to talk with you. I met, I think, Chris Fernandez, who does like publicity for you guys. I think it was SuperCon a year or two back. And then I met you at New York Comic Con last year. So I always like to go to New York. All kinds of good things happen there. So I got to meet you, and I really love, particularly there's a book that you do that I love called, it's Midnight Task Force.
Correct.
Which I love. And I've read some, I glanced some of the others, but that's the one that really leaps out at me. I've been lucky enough to read the first four issues. I know that numbers one and two have come out through Diamond.
Correct. Yes, sir.
When does number three come out?
It's coming out next month. Okay. First week. Okay. I can have the first week of September.
Oh, good. Wednesday. Okay. And then number four will come a month after that?
Correct. Okay. Uh-huh. We already, I mean, it's, well, you read them all.
Yeah.
They're ready. So they're the printing company right now. So let's just hope that it gets to the retailers on time.
Yeah.
But yes. It's a monthly release.
Cool. Now, I, having read the first four issues, let me just say that after I read those, I'm looking forward to, this is called Volume 1, I'm looking forward to Volume 2.
Okay.
Is Volume 2 in the works? How's that doing?
Volume 2 is in the works. Mm-hmm. The thing is that right now, for all the realities that you know of a startup, of this crazy venture that we embarked on, sometimes schedule move, what we have planned for one series has to be pulled like a little bit on hold. But no, Midnight Task Force is still in the works.
Okay.
Couple of issues of the second volume have been written. And as soon as we get the artist, Alejandro Giraldo, free on some of the stuff that he's working right now, which I'm sure that you are going to love what he's doing right now. So after that, he's going to jump back to Midnight Task Force, and we're going to continue the story.
I do have to say, I love the artwork on Midnight Task Force. Just spectacular. I love the story, too. The story is very creative. I haven't read this kind of story before. What I love about Mad Cave Studios, one of the subtitles is the best independent comics, something like that. And I like that about it, too. I got to ask, just because these things drive me nuts, the logo that you have calls Mad Cave, and it looks like it's a bat in a straitjacket. Is that what that is?
Yes, that's what it is.
I was looking at it going like, I what is that? The thing is, he's winking at us. That's the best part.
Yes, it's our little Mad who's crazy, so we had to put him in a straitjacket.
My understanding is you're the one that established Mad Cave Studios. Is that right?
I did, yes, sir. Almost 4 years ago, it was supposed to be like a passion project of mine. But suddenly we started getting the right people on the group, I guess. And then we got focus of, okay, let's make out of this passion project, out of this crazy idea, a company that we can stand behind, that we can publish on books. And let's create beautiful stuff for everybody that is willing to pick a Mad Cave Studios book.
Now, so far, you've been the writer of the three different series, and there's Battle Cats is one, Midnight Task Force, which is my favorite, but you know, I'm partial to that kind of story. And then there's also Knights of the Golden Sun, which is kind of biblical about that. So you'd write all different kinds of storytelling, which I really like. I always think a good writer can do many different types of stories, and you're proving yourself to be a good writer with all the different stuff that you do. Talk about that. I mean, you know, you talked about it being a passion project and got things going. You know, have you always had an interest in comics? Have you these different kinds of stories are very different from one another, which of course I really love. How does this all work for you?
Always, Wayne. Well, first of all, thank you for those great comments. I mean, I really appreciate your kind words. Growing up, I was obsessed with comic books, obsessed with movies, obsessed with video games, every type of entertainment back there. And I basically just got my hands on everything that came my way. So I don't know, one day I just woke up and I was like, listen, this is something that I really, really want to do. I want to make comic books, and hopefully let's do them now while still can, and not when I'm old and wrinkled and I can't do it anymore. So I prefer to just give it a shot right now and then not have the regret of why didn't I started this sooner. And so far it's been a blast, and trying to push myself with every single genre that you just mentioned, whether it be a biblical story with a lot of fantasy fiction action, or if it's Midnight Task Force, kind of like your cyberpunk noir Blade Runner vibe with your typical schizophrenic detective, Battle Cats, medieval fantasy with anthropomorphic characters. So I try to push myself, trying to work out stories that are what I would like to see out there, and try to give the readers or anybody who would pick them up a hell of a good time.
Well, you're doing that. I mean, I really enjoy the book. Like I said, I saw Midnight Task Force for the first time at SuperCon a couple of years ago. And from then on, I was really interested. And then somewhere I noticed that it was coming out through Diamond. And that's when I contacted Chris about talking to you, because I still love this story. I'm so glad it's going to be out for people to be able to read it, because there's so many good things. This Midnight Task Force to me should be on Sci-Fi on the TV channel. I'm just convinced of it because it's just a great thing. Because I love the sci-fi cyberpunk thing. I love I'm reading out on Wikipedia, which I always nervous about because it's never exactly right. But if I can, let me just read the description of Midnight Task Force real quickly. It says, Midnight Task Force is a sci-fi cyberpunk thriller that will have you questioning reality itself. The year is 2055, and Detroit is a nightmarish city plagued by violence and fueled by corruption. The story follows schizophrenic detective Aiden McCormick as he tries to solve a series of brutal murders while keeping the dark secrets of his own past hidden from everyone around him. I like the character. I have to say, Aiden, really, I enjoy him. He's unusual in the sense that he's got long hair. It looks like he's got a cybernetic arm. A left arm is cybernetic or something. And then he's having a conversation a lot of time with other people. And I don't know how much of this, I don't want to spoil too much. But, you know, right away we get to understand that he's carrying around vials that talk with him because they are I don't want to spoil all this stuff, but he's talking with people that he knows through these vials and through the conversation. The great way that you know who he's talking to is there's a color associated with them, with each one, and I get to know that. So sometimes I see that stuff and I can't figure it out, but your thing was really clear to me. I knew exactly what was going on, and I love that about the book. It helped me get in and really love the book. The very first issue, of course, he is presented with a mystery. Mm-hmm. And the way he resolves it, I mean, almost immediately, I was just like, wow, okay, he really can do this kind of stuff. So I love that. I think that was a great way to start the series off, was to give us an idea of how he can solve problems that maybe others can't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I love that about that. This is always thing for me. I'm a big Batman fan. Somebody asked me one time, who was my, who was the hero of my life? And I always said it was Batman. And they'd say, well, why? And I would say, because he can solve mysteries nobody else can. And I love that about the character. And I love that about Aiden, too. When he resolves that the mystery right away, and he understands what's going on to a T, I said, gosh, this is a really good character. I really love, because we don't get many detective stories these days. So Aiden is one of those things I've been longing for in comics, to get somebody who can actually solve mysteries. I love that.
You're making me very happy today, Wayne. I mean, I love that you're telling me all of this, because exactly you picked up on what the character is, who Aiden is. And believe me, we have more Aiden McCormick coming your way.
So talk to me about, how did you develop the character? Is it based on somebody you know? Is it based on you? I mean, is it just your imagination running wild and doing stuff? How did you come up with Aiden?
No, I think that I was just watching probably a lot of CSI shows. I mean, I'm a big sucker for those shows like Criminal Minds. I watched the entire season of Dexter. And then when you get behind like the psyche of the serial killers, what are they after? How do they think? What do they want? And I don't know, kind of like the detective, which is even... has more problems than the serial killers in another way or in other areas. How can this play out? And how can this character like strive or be above a mental illness such as schizophrenia, which is also mixed by something that you learn as the book progresses, which is his PTSD. He was in the war, so he's battling. He has many internal battles, not only the physical ones, but also some people that he lost in the past. So I don't know. It's more of okay, getting the detective aspect of things into the story, and how do you solve murders, but not your typical. With not your typical character, but with a character that can have monumental problems on its own.
Now, it's called Midnight Task Force, and for the longest time I kept wondering why it was only one guy. I saw him, of course, he's talking with these other people, supposedly, but then later on we get to like issue 3 or something, which hasn't been released yet. I don't want to spoil anything, but let's just say we find out why it's called Midnight Task Force in issue 3 a little more. So I really like that about that. I love a story that unfolds and keeps me guessing, and then when I learn something, I go, okay, now that makes sense. So I love the writing in this book. I think that it's really, really well done. I think that, like I said, peeling back the onion, and it was always great fun. I don't want to know everything right away. I want to be able to slowly pick things up and be interested in as things go. And I think these books, and if you haven't read issue 3 yet, I highly encourage it, because it's going to be a lot of things are going to start to happen, and when it gets to issue 4, then I'm left wanting more, is all I can say about that. I don't want to spoil anything in issue 4, but there's so much stuff that you have, so much story that you've packed into this book, and the art is really striking too, I have to say. Like I was saying, I really loved the two of the marriage of those two are really great as far as that. So I'm, if you haven't read issue 3, hold on to your seat. It's coming. And I can't wait for more people to read it, because I really enjoyed what happens in issue 3 and in 4.
Thank you, Wayne. Yes, I mean, I have to agree with you. I mean, Alejandro Giraldo, the artist, I mean, he's a monster in the best sense of the word. He's really, really talented. And I think that he's only scratching the surface. I mean, I know that he's going to be one of the greats. Just give him time. But I'm really, really to have him. I mean, I'm blessed that he's working on this book with me.
Some of the interesting thing that really gets me is the conversation he's having with these other people along the way. You know, sometimes they give him good information, but not always. It's an interesting discussion going on sometimes. They don't always agree on what Aiden's up to or what he should do. And I love that discussion part of it. It gives us a sense of, you know, why he does what he's doing. So I like that quite a lot, too.
Yeah, that's part of the schizophrenia that he's battling with. I also don't want to get too much into it, but that is why he has to try to be like a little bit in control and be self-aware of what's going on and how he can probably just drive the conversation, even if he thinks that it's going one way or another. I mean, it's an interesting concept, and I do have a lot of fun when I'm writing these characters.
Because I'm just fascinated by the fact that not only is he busy trying to solve the mystery, but he's got this discussion always going on. Yes. So, you know, that's kind of difficult. I would have trouble with that if somebody was distracting me, you know. But yet he uses that to his advantage. I love that about the character, that he is, even things that would distract me, he uses to his advantage. So I really like that. They say in there that he's the best detective in Detroit. Mm-hmm. And I always get, you know, when that first mystery hits and then we get on to the greater mystery, what's going on, I was so intrigued as to how he dealt with people and stuff like that. You know, he's such a fascinating character in that way. You know, he's very confident. You know, at one point in issue two, he runs into I don't know if you want to say a gang leader, or he's got a guy who's got girls draped all over him all the time, and he's talking yes. with him. And I got a huge kick out of, you know, the best part was he doesn't let these things bother him. He's in the spider club, and he gets a tar beat out of him, but he also manages to get a couple licks in on the main guy who's there, which I really enjoyed. See, you know, the great stuff. And, of course, the use of color. When he goes in the spider club, it's all purple all the time, which I loved. And, you know, the battles and stuff like that. I think your script made good use of his art abilities.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's Alejandro always... he's got a great solution. Even when we are at a crossroads and we're like, okay, how can we depict this scene better? I mean, he always comes with a comeback that it just blows it out of the water. And hopefully that's the book that you finally were to experience, Wayne. So yeah, I mean, I might be somebody that laid the blueprint for him. But again, most of the stuff that you see there, it's also part of his creativity at its best.
You know, it's stunning the way he does some stuff. Even in the darkness, he uses light, what little light there is, to show the faces and images. There's two aspects of comic art that always I want to see done well. I want to see expressions and I want to see action done well. Some people are good at one and not the other. And so to me, but I just thought this was really strong on both of those avenues, that when we see people's expressions and their faces, we know exactly what they're feeling and you know, what the situation is with them. And then when the action comes, wow, I hurt sometimes when I'm reading this stuff, because wow, that one, I see the punches and the explosions and stuff, and I kind of hurt going like, oh, that's going to hurt. You know, so it's a super well done book. I love the whole story of it. Again, I think Sci-Fi should pick this up and make this into a TV show, because it's such a good book. It grabbed me from the moment I saw it for the first time. I knew I was going to be interested in it, and I love it. So as far as like the volume two and stuff like that, I don't want to spoil 3 and 4, because some people haven't had the opportunity to read that yet. But to me, I think you end it in a way that made me, like I said, want more. And I'm so tempted to spoil, but I don't want to do that. The way that I'm looking forward to what you're going to do in volume two, I'm thinking of it like a TV show.
And you can call it like that. Sometimes I see it like that, Wayne. So I think that you're seeing it perfectly. Yes, these are when books take a break and they come back. I mean, sure. I mean, why not? It's season two of Limited Task Force. Yes.
That's for me. I really love it. I'm so fascinated by what you're going to do. I can't say anything, because I'll say something and spoil it. But the thing that it's great characters, lots of action, surprises along the way. and so much interesting things happening that I, you know, I turn the page and I when I get to the end of the book, I go, oh, it's the end already, doggone it. Where's the more? And I have to say, you know, book four is that way because, you know, I just dying to know what you have in mind after issue four. So it's such a terrific story. I love this kind of story, and it's so often I just get lost and I can't find my way back out of the book. But this one pulled me along real well, and I enjoyed the reading of it. You know, like I said, some books I'm just a couple pages in, I'm bored, I leave it. This one I could not do that to. I had to really, really pay attention and get through to the end. And then, like I said, issue four is just that kind of book that always makes me know this is a good book. So I just think Midnight Task Force is one of those comics. It's one of the reasons that I go out and buy comics is to read a story like this.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you, Wayne, for your comments. I mean, it just got me pumped to finish volume two and just try to release it as soon as possible, because I really want you to see where this story is going.
I can't wait. I just can't wait, because it's going to be great fun. It's good stuff. So, you must have self-published some of the books, because I saw a couple of them when I saw Chris at SuperCon. I got a couple of the books. I think I got issues one and two. And mm-hmm. So now that it's out in Diamond, of course, that just got my attention immediately. I had to talk with you about it. But there's other books, too. Now, my understanding is that Battle Cats has already come out as well?
Yes. Actually, Battle Cats was the first release, was the first book that Mad Cave Studios officially released this year with Diamond. So we started March. That was Battle Cats. It was five issues. The trade paperback is out. Mm. And then the following month, we released Midnight Task Force 1. Mm-hmm. Till we reach issue 4. Then the following month, we get the trade paperback. Mm-hmm. And then in November, we got the release of our new IP, which is Knights of the Golden Sun. Mm-hmm. This one is going to be six issues. Mm-hmm. Then the following month, the trade paperback. Mm-hmm. And get ready, because 2019 is going to be a very interesting year for the number of titles that we hope, we wish that we're going to be putting out there.
Okay. So how do we keep up with the stuff you're doing? Do you get your website, Facebook? How do we do it?
Absolutely. The best way is probably madcavestudios.com or madcave.com or Twitter or Instagram or Facebook or Tumblr or Google Plus or YouTube. Those are we're everywhere. So if you want to keep up what's going on, sign up to our newsletter. We try to inform everybody and the fans, especially what these books are coming out and what's going on inside the cave.
I saw you in New York last year. Are you guys planning to go back to New York this year, or what other conventions are you going to do?
Absolutely, Wayne. No, this year we'll be kind of focusing on some of the books that we need to release next year. Mm-hmm. So on the convention front, we're just going to be a little bit shy. Mm-hmm. But of course, we're going to be in New York this year, knock on wood. Mm-hmm. But I would love to see you there. So you will have the trade paperback of Midnight Task Force by then.
Oh boy! So, are you going to put any extra stuff in the trade? What are you going to do with that?
With the trade?
Yeah.
Well, the trade paperback just recollects issues 1 through 4.
Okay.
But in the same vein as we did with Battle Cats, and that's something that we plan to keep on doing with every single trade we release, it's some extra content at the end of the book. Kind of like Alejandro may be talking about it. He started a page, how he approached a page of the script, and what was his technique, and some of the initial concepts for the character, maybe some deleted pages from the final work, I guess. So you will get more bang for the buck when the trade is released.
Okay. Sounds good. I'll have to track down Battle Cats is what I'm going to have to do, because that's one I hadn't read yet. But Midnight Task Force, like I said, got my attention. I do want to ask you, though, about Knights of the Golden Sun, because there seem to be a lot of comics these days that are coming out that deals with biblical subjects. which always fascinates me. Let me real quickly read the Knights of the Golden Sun. It says, Knights of the Golden Sun is a biblical epic set during a time of great turmoil. 400 years separate the Old Testament from the New Testament, during which neither man nor angel could hear God's divine message. In his absence, a power struggle erupted among the archangels and the fallen over who will control Father's throne. Providence, the angels, and humanity would never be the same. See, I that's a time in history that is unknown, and you're filling the gap there, which I'm honestly fascinated. Of course, now this is your concept of it. I don't imagine that God came down and said, this is what, this is your telling a story and using this for influence. Talk a little bit about Knights of the Golden Sun, because I'm so intrigued in what you're going to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you said, it's a period of time that eventually no one knows why he left. I mean, why is there that gap between the Old Testament and the New Testament? So I got inspired by that, and I created a story that revolves around the reasons why God left, what happened with the archangels, what happened with the fallen. The fallen are these fallen angels that fell with Lucifer when he tried to take over heaven. And what's going on? What's going on with the humans? Where do they stand? Where do the angels stand now that their great leader their great commander-in-chief is missing? So what are they supposed to do now? Are they supposed to, like, carry on his message? Are they supposed to, like, follow on the fallen footsteps and just take over? And what are the fallen thinking? Like, okay, now that the God Almighty is not anywhere to be seen, so can we take over not only Earth, but can we take over heaven as well? And I got a couple of twists and turns there, mystery, that it's not only going to be the Bible, or since it was like my main source of inspiration, but you would also see historical figures that were actually alive and existed during that time, which was, for example, Alexander the Great. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see Alexander the Great. He's going to be a driving force in the story. And that's all I can tell you.
Is that four? It'll be four issues as well?
That's going to be six issues.
Six issues, okay.
Six issues. Mauricio Villarreal, I mean, he's very, very similar to Alejandro Giraldo. I mean, they're very good friends. But his art is amazing, Wayne. I'm sure that you're going to have a blast when you get to experience his pages. Hopefully, I'm not overselling it. But yeah, he's done with issue number five as we speak. So he's going to start working on issue number six. Probably in next week or the following. And yeah, we're right on track for a November release.
So I'm really looking forward to that. I have to tell you, because I'm interested in the Bible and different things. And this was a time period that always fascinated me, because what happened during this time? There was, between the beginning of the New Testament and what's the end of the Old Testament, beginning of the New, there was all this time and, apparently nothing happened. I couldn't believe that. So, it's great that you're going to at least conjecture a little bit and kind of help fill in those gaps and kind of use some imagination to give us an idea of what could have happened during that time. I think it's really cool. Of course, I got to ask, Knights of the Golden Sun, why is it called that? Do we find out why it's called that?
Yes, you're going to find out, but if I tell you right now, I would probably be spoiling it. Okay. But you're gonna find out why it's called Knights of the Golden Sun and who the Golden Sun is and the whole shebang.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to that, because it's if it's anything like Midnight Task Force, I'm going to be hooked. So I'm really looking forward to that. Any other projects you guys – you mentioned there were some other books that might be coming. It's probably too soon to – you probably haven't announced all those things. But are there other projects you can tell us about that you're working on? Because you can write all different kinds of stories, so I'd be interested to see what other stories you have in mind.
Yes, okay. Hopefully Chris Fernandez doesn't kill me for giving you like inside information. But yeah, next year we're coming out with Honor and Curse, which is our It's set in feudal Japan, so it's going to be our ninja story, which he's got a demon inside and he has to control him, and but we're also going to be grounded a little bit of the actual situation that was going on in Japan at the time, with the clans, with their leaders. So yeah, the political position Japan was facing is going to be looming there as well. It's going to be it's a great book. Drawn by Nicolas Salamanca, and Tequino is doing the color for that. I mean, I'm also very, very excited. It's filled with action. It's a beautiful book that I'm also very excited about. Alejandro Giraldo, which is the artist on Midnight Task Force, he's developing an IP that is called Wovenheart, and Wovenheart, it's going to be set in your Victorian era. And it's basically monster slayers that can travel through time. So we're going to see a couple of crazy story concepts there. And we have another one called Nuklands, which is going to be your Mad Max with sprinkled with another little thing that I can't tell you right now, because I know that then Chris is just going to kill me. But for sure, I mean, those three APs are in the works, and also a story called RV9, which was written by Ben Goldsmith, and it's drawn by Travis Mercer, and it's about an assassin that belongs to a secret society, the oldest secret society in the world, and it's also in 2055. It's your same setting for Midnight Task Force. I know that you like that series, so we might be able to cross those two over eventually in the future. So again, big plans, Wayne. Plus. The whole other stuff that is too raw for me to talk about, but it's coming. We're excited that we're going to be able to give you something that you can smile about.
Yeah, great stuff. The Midnight Task Force, I'm still glowing about, because I thought that was such a great, great book. Are you in any way trying to get some of this stuff on to, like I talked about sci-fi, I wish you guys had a production company or something that you could turn these into TVs or movies or something like that, because they feel, especially now with special effects and things like that being as they are, these could very easily be successful TV shows or movies. Have you guys approached people about doing that?
No, Wayne. At this moment, I mean, we're focusing on the stories, and we had a lot of things to prove coming out of the gate with another publishing company doing comic books. So we kind of focus on that first. Sure, we're open to exploring any ideas. I would be lying if I would tell you that I don't close my eyes sometimes and I see Midnight Task Force being a series for HBO, kind of like with that needy greedy aspect that they specialize for, or maybe Battle Cats that you can see as a Saturday morning cartoon or animation piece that you see nowadays on Netflix. I mean, sure. I mean, that is something that we could explore in the future. We just need the right people that can guide us there. But right now, we're focusing on developing as much content as possible and focusing on the story, so we can give you a very good and well developed story with great characters that you can get behind.
I hope someday that happens, but you know, I'm glad that you're focusing on making the best comics you can, because that's when that'll turn and somebody will notice it at some point, and you'll get optioned hopefully, and things will start to happen along those lines. I did notice something on your website that kind of intrigued me, because you have been writing so far. I mean, it sounds like you're writing the other ones too. And yet you've got a search going on for writers and artists. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because, you've done a great job. You've set the standard real high for people to come. The choice of artists, your scripts and stuff, and the characters, all. You've really set the standard high. But I'm kind of interested. You've obviously set the groundwork for people to be able to do it. Talk about that, this search for writers and for artists.
Okay, thank you for asking that question, Wayne. Yes, we're at a point in time where we feel with Giovanna Tobar, which is our editor-in-chief, and with Chris Fernandez, which is now our chief strategic officer, that we need to expand that, and that we need to explore those other venues that you were mentioning, probably. Mm-hmm. But because we've been so focused on trying to build a company with all the bells and whistles that is required, mm-hmm. I could be the only one trying to write for the company, because I would be able to allow myself to also work within the whole trying to come up with build a company thing. So we were not ready, but I mean, I can't, and that's not what I envision for Mad Cave Studios or none of my colleagues. That I write all the books and that this is only like a Mark London imprint. No, I mean, I want more people that can actually play and make their dreams come true. Mm-hmm. If this is what they want, either as writers, either as artists, inkers, colorists. I mean, I'm all for giving them the shot. And that's what we want. And that's probably going to be phase two of this company that again started as a passion project, but we cannot keep on restraining ourselves. We need more great people on board.
Now, how do you apply for these for the writer and the artist search?
You can go to www.madcavestudios.com. There's a submission page right there, or you can contact us through Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I mean, everywhere that you can find Mad Cave Studios, I mean, you can shoot us an email, send a direct message, or go to the submission page right on the website, and you can contact us there and send your samples. If you have any doubts, I mean, we're all for giving everybody a shot at this.
Okay. Well, and like I said, they've got to meet your standards, which you have set very high, which I think is going to be great. There are good people out there that can still do it. It's tough for you to wear so many hats. So it must be, if you can have some other things that you can maybe just edit instead of having to write it, that might be a good thing for you to... You can still write the stuff you want to, but then you don't have to necessarily write everything.
Mm-hmm. So absolutely. Absolutely, Wayne. And it's good to probably just get like an outside perspective of a new blood to the stories. And because a writer sometimes he tries to put what he is, what he believes in on the page. And we want Mad Cave Studios. It's all about variety. It's all about themes that we can explore. And that can only happen when it's a collaboration of great people and talented people that want to make this work.
Well, variety is a big thing to me. I love to be able to read many different good stories, and you guys are doing that. I think that Midnight Task Force just grabbed me. I got to get Battle Cats now, and then I'll be looking out for our Knights of the Golden Sun and other good things. So, Mark, I think you guys are doing a terrific job. I hope that Mad Cave Studios becomes one of those well-known, kind of like image-level companies, and people can be able to get the stuff they want and get their comic fix from you guys, because I think you're doing a terrific job.
Thank you, Wayne. I mean, I can't thank you enough for your kind words. I mean, this is really the what makes it all worth it. I mean, hearing you speak like this, I mean, I really want to give it all. And hopefully try to, again, give people the best possible stories out there.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
It's always a pleasure to talk with Frank Martin, the creator of Modern Testament. And you have a trade paperback coming out with that. How are you doing today, Frank?
Hey, Wayne, what's up? Always great to talk to you.
Not much, not much. Now, am I correct? Is it a trade paperback or is it a hardcover? How's this coming out?
It's a trade paperback, and it's a collection of all four previous volumes. I call them volumes, but they're really issues that were about 32 pages long. So the trade itself is 160 pages.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, as I was mentioning to you before we started to record, I understand that Insane Comics is no longer with us. How's that going to impact your book? Because I noticed it was still has it on the – you sent me a PDF that I got to read, which I appreciate. And it still lists Insane Comics on there. So how's this going to affect what's going to happen, how people can access the trade?
I mean, that's really the only thing where they're going to access it from. They won't be able to get it from the Insane Comics store or the Insane Comics through Comixology or any other avenues that it has. But for the most part, it doesn't really change much. I mean, the book is still going to be coming out, and it's still going to be available to people. It's just a matter of where they're going to get it, which would probably be through my website. Well, right now it's the Kickstarter, but once that's over, it's the website.
Oh, okay, so you got a Kickstarter going on right now?
I do have a Kickstarter going on right now. We started July 31st, and it's running till August 28th, and we're rocking and rolling.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad you've got a Kickstarter going because that really helps with these things, making it happen. How many Kickstarters you done so far?
This is my first.
Oh, really?
It is.
Yeah. Oh, what's that like?
A bit overwhelming. I did a lot of research to try to prepare myself, but no matter how much you prepare, you'll never really know what it's like until you start doing it yourself. So now that I'm in my thick of it, I'm kind of learning as I go, and it's been a process, but it's as stressful as it is, it's still a lot of fun at the same time.
We always call it the daily heart attack. Every day you look to see whether somebody has donated, and if they haven't, you have like a little heart attack. Oh, no, nobody donated today. Oh, no.
You're looking to see if anybody canceled their pledge.
Oh, yeah, that too. All that good stuff is in there. So, what made you go with a Kickstarter? I mean, because you've done the other four issues. I guess you must have paid for them yourself. Maybe it's time you need a little more money finally to be able to do these things.
Well, the Kickstarter is mainly to fund the print run, just to kind of gauge interest, see who – and mainly a big portion of it too is kind of generate buzz, generate press, kind of make it a big event that I've spent a big chunk of my life, a couple years, putting this whole thing together, and now it's one go out with a blast, put the trade together, do a big Kickstarter, and run a nice campaign with a bunch of fun stuff, and then once it's over, we'll move on to the next.
Okay, well, of course, we'll get to the next thing, because I remember you saying that when you got to Volume 4 that there wasn't going to be any more Modern Testament, yet in the trade, there are a couple of different new stories.
In the trade, so in the four volumes, they had three stories each, so combined 4 times 3, that's 12 stories. But the trade itself has 15 stories. And two of those stories were only available digitally previously, so this is their first time in print. And one story is exclusive to the trade. You can't get it anywhere else. So I didn't just want to put out a trade with all recycled material. I at least want to put one new story in there and a bunch of new pinups that you can't get anywhere else. So that's kind of new to the trade.
Now, why don't you tell people for who may not have heard you talking before about what Modern Testament's about?
All right, so what Modern Testament is, it's an anthology series of standalone stories. They don't interconnect at all. And they're about beings from biblical mythology. So angels, demons, I got a story about jinn, golem, and those types of characters. And the idea is that I kind of placed them in the modern world, in our society, a modern setting, and to see how they would react with people, what kind of their roles would be, what they would do, how do they feel about this world. And that's kind of how it grew from there. It's kind of in the same vein as a Constantine or a Ghost Rider as far as dealing with biblical beings as a mythology.
Mm-hmm. Now, the first story in there, I think, is a new one. It's called Campaign Promises.
Yes, that's the new story that's exclusive to the trade, and I wanted to put it first so that as soon as people opened it up, they got something brand new.
The thing that's interesting to me, and I have to ask, does this have anything to do with the current political climate we have in America?
I don't want to say it doesn't, but I don't want to say it directly does. I mean, I would say it's more inspired, not necessarily allegorical.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. It's not necessarily commenting on certain people. You're setting up a situation that sort of resembles what's going on now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously everybody has an opinion about what's going on in politics today. You can't really escape it anywhere you go, seeing it on TV or on social media. So obviously you form some sort of feelings and some sort of opinions. Mm-hmm. And this story arose out of my own feelings and my own opinions. So it wasn't necessarily – it wasn't like I sat down and I said, I need to do my own political story. But it's how it was born.
Well, how much of it do you want to reveal? I hate to dive into it without knowing what the parameters are, because
I can tell the premise of the story. It's basically the Antichrist announces his candidacy for president. Mm-hmm. So I'm not making any direct correlations to anybody there. If anything, this is not about the Antichrist himself. It's more about the campaign of the Antichrist.
Right.
How he rises in popularity, because the way I had fun with this story too, because I didn't do a traditional story. Mm-hmm. I framed it in sort of somebody's watching TV, mm-hmm. and they're flipping through the channels, and we see the Antichrist on a talk show, and we see him doing interviews, and we see him at a press rally. So it's kind of like, it's not a typical story. It's kind of, you're flipping back and forth as far as watching him on TV. Mm-hmm. So I did have fun with it, kind of framing in that way.
What was more interesting to me than the Antichrist was the reaction to the Antichrist.
Yeah, that's the main I guess theme or I don't want to say message, but the main thing I wanted to get across when I was writing the story was, it's not the character himself, it's how people react.
It's interesting that he tells the truth mostly, and people react to that, and they actually, it reminds me very much of Negan on The Walking Dead.
I don't watch The Walking Dead. So.
Okay, well, Negan is a character who goes around and kills people and beats them to a pulp and stuff, but because he's sort of nice about it, people like him. When you go to comic book conventions, you'll see people walking around in Negan outfits carrying Lucille the baseball bat.
I'm familiar with the character, so I'm kind of like, I know what he looks like. I kind of always thought it was weird that you just let people walk around with baseball bats covered in barbed wire. Okay.
They sell those. Image Comics does. But the thing is, he's a killer.
Yeah.
And people still like him, you know, because he's kind of – he's got a wry way of doing it. He's kind of funny when he does these things. If he's going to kill you, he's going to be nice about it. And I got that kind of feeling from the Antichrist in that. He's going to tell them the truth, and they're not necessarily going to be – because he's telling them the truth, they're okay with that. That he might, well, there's a certain end to it, and he's going someplace with it. And I'm just kind of, because he's being nice and kind about it, and telling them the truth, they like that.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of things, again, drawing from our current political climate, a lot of the comments I've heard a lot of times from people was, he tells it like it is. So. Mm-hmm. I threw that line in there a bunch of times. He might be the Antichrist, but at least he's open about it. At least he's honest about it.
Mm-hmm. And then when somebody says, "God bless you, sir," he says, "I'm probably not eligible for that," which I thought was quite a funny thing. But it's so interesting. I politics is such a wild setup, I have to say. I always like to say that politics is, the real word defined as poly making many, and ticks are blood-sucking parasites. And so for me, and as I read this, I kept thinking about, boy, I said, this is really talking about, I hate to say it, but sometimes the politicians are very much like the Antichrist in this story, I get. Not just certain people, but the wide variety of them. If you're going to be a politician, you got to be able to see your name up on bulletin boards and billboards and flyers and all over the place. And I don't think many people want to see that. I think that it takes a certain kind of person to want to have his name and his face everywhere.
Yeah, it's a tough thing being in politics, because you have to have that push and pull between wanting to help people, but at the same time getting that joy out of the spotlight and clinging on to. You don't run for politics unless or some sort of office unless you want it, which is a little counterintuitive to go into public service because you're supposed to be doing it for other people. So it's the nature of the job itself is a little paradoxical.
Mm-hmm. And it ends interestingly. I really like, again, your stories always end in a way that I always enjoy. It's never what I expect to have happen.
Yes, I mean, for the most Modern Testament, for the most part, they're pretty dark. But every once in a while, I throw a little happy ending in there.
Well, we won't comment on that on the end of this story, whether it's one or the other. But tell me what the other ones are, because I recognize some of them because I've read the previous issues. What are the other stories that we haven't seen?
If I could do this from memory, going in order. So after the Antichrist comes. I did them in publication order.
Okay.
I don't know if you realize that. So
okay.
The next story is Fallen Angel,
right.
Which features an angel. He's an alcoholic angel, kind of down on his luck,
mm-hmm.
kind of depressed about it.
Mm-hmm.
The next story is one of my favorites, the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
It features a demon. After that is Feast or Famine, which features Famine, who's the horseman of the apocalypse, Famine.
Mm-hmm.
Then is The Old Man and the Sea Serpent, which was the Free Comic Book Day digital short that was released 2 years ago, so that would be what, 2016?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Yeah,
yep.
So that was that. Then after that comes Schoolyard Monster, which features a golem.
Mm-hmm.
Then comes the Great Hunt, I believe it's called, which features a behemoth. A couple goes on a safari trying to hunt the behemoth monster.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that is War, What Is He Good For? Or I guess, What Is He Good For? And whatever the song is.
Mm-hmm.
That features the Horsemen of War.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that comes Shoulder Chin,
mm-hmm.
which features the two genie that fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then comes The Abandoned,
mm-hmm.
which features the Nephilim, or a boy that's half angel, half human.
Right.
Then comes Down with the Sickness, which features Pestilence, the Horseman.
Mm-hmm.
Then comes the other Free Comic Book digital short that I threw in there, just first time in print. It's called Sky High. It features Ziz, which is kind of a giant mythical bird.
Mm-hmm.
Then all the three stories from Volume 4, which is Guy Complex, which features God, Better the Devil You Know than the Devil You Don't, which is the devil.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, it is At Death's Door, which is Death, the horse.
Mm-hmm. Apocalypse. It's interesting because, you know, we've talked before about coming to the end of this. Now that you've got the trade together, and I noticed in your afterword, you talked about the fact that you said before that you weren't going to do anything, and you've got new content here. So you said, I'm not going to be foolish enough to declare this the end either.
Well, I don't know how much you've been following about the campaign, but I did a little early bird reward special.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody that backed within the first 3 days got a free digital comic from that used to be part of Insane, which was Hollow Girl, Luke Cooper's book. That was the book that went out. And along with it was an announcement that I'm doing a crossover with Luke called Hollow Testament, which I'm doing three more stories, three more biblical beings, and Hollow Girl encounters them. So we've been putting that together. Luke wrote and illustrated one story. I wrote two others, which are illustrated by two other artists. And it's been a lot of fun. We're still working on it.
That's cool. I've talked to Luke about his book, too, because I like Hollow Girl. I thought it was really good stuff. And it's going to be interesting to see how you guys cross these over, what kind of way you're going to make that happen.
It's kind of, I mean, in a sense, it's pretty easy because Hollow Girl does have a lot of supernatural elements to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not totally out of the realm of possibility. It's not like Hollow Girl is a straight crime action book that you throw some sort of biblical being there. It's like, what is this character doing there? So it's not too far-fetched to think that Hollow Girl will encounter some mythological creatures.
How are you going to print that? Is that going to be through – it's part of the Kickstarter?
We haven't really decided yet.
Mm-hmm.
Hollow Girl got picked up by another publisher, which I think their Kickstarter – they were running Kickstarter for Hollow Girl, which just wrapped up. So we haven't really decided what route we're going to go as far as bringing it to print or releasing it digitally. We're kind of just – let's make this book, and then we'll kind of figure out what we'll do with it afterwards. But we're getting close to completion, so it shouldn't be coming, hopefully, by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Now, Sky High, I did recognize that was a story I hadn't read before because of the bird, the Ziz.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I don't know if many people know what a Ziz is.
A Ziz is, so the way it goes in kind of biblical mythology is that Leviathan is a sea monster, is the monster of the sea. Behemoth is the monster of land. And then in the monster of the air is Ziz, which is kind of a huge, big, majestic bird. And I kind of wanted – it was kind of tough because it's not a character people are familiar with. I could get away with a lot of stuff with a demon and angels and God and a lot of the – or Golem. A lot of creatures or characters people are familiar with. I had some leeway there because people already had an understanding as far as what they are as characters. So I could kind of use that as a background to build a story. People aren't really familiar with the Ziz, so I couldn't really rely on that and use it as a crutch. Mm-hmm. And the basis for the story or the premise is that two climb the bird is very majestic. It's kind of, people see it and it's just huge and people are in awe of it. And the premise of the story is two climbers, they're brothers and sister, and they're always competing, and they're always because they're always competing, that they're always absorbed into themselves and into their own world and not paying attention to what's going on around them. And they're climbing and they're racing to the top of the mountain to be the person who's first. And they get there and then they're arguing over who wins. And of course, they stumbled into the Ziz's domain, the Ziz's home. So they kind of have to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it has a big surprise ending, which is good.
Since you, it's a surprise. To me, it was the only outcome that was possible.
As far as like what the Ziz look like, I mean, how did you come up with that?
I kind of just, Larry Spike Jarrell is another insane creator, was the illustrator. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what should I do with this? And I said, just make it majestic. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the end result. I want it to be a bird, so I don't really want it to be a monster, but I want it to be glorious. So that was kind of how we revolved around it. Just big and majestic and nice and beautiful. I didn't really want to go to the kind of creature route where it looks monstrous or hideous. So that was kind of where he went with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really good. I thought the story turned – it's typical, you know. See, for me, that was a big surprise how it ends. Mm-hmm. It makes sense, but it was a big surprise because you kind of think in these kinds of stories people are going to, shall we say, prove they're better than they are.
Themselves. I mean, Modern Testament's kind of weird because there are some stories – that you might consider or in some twisted logic, you can consider happy endings. Mm-hmm. In some way or another. I mean, they might not be a fairy tale ending, but there's silver linings to a couple of these stories in the end. I mean, there might not be a happy ending for everybody, but a happy ending for some is better than just kind of depressing ending for everybody.
Well, it's a happy ending for the Ziz. I'll give it that.
I to be honest with you, I don't think he really cares much. That was kind of at least my take in the story. I mean, he might be happy, but I think he was just like, to him, he was so big and he was just, the people are an ass, so he could care less.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I mean, you know, as I looked them over, it's hard for me to pick out ones that I like the best. You know, the new one, of course, stands out to me because I haven't read that before. But I like all of them.
The part about this series is that it's kind of all over the place. And I don't want to say I did that on purpose, but I wanted to have fun when writing these stories. I didn't want to work too hard to say, you know what, I can't write this story because it doesn't really fit with all the others. I got stories that are like that are really gory and graphically horror. Then I got some that are psychologically horror. Then I got some that are pretty comedic in tone, and others that are satirical. They're all over the place, and they run a spectrum of tone and genre. So it's tough picking one out that you like because they're all really so different in both style and artistic style.
I probably like the C one and also the Golem one were ones I really liked.
I'm sorry, what was the first one?
The C one, the one having to do with the...
The Leviathan.
Yeah.
That was a fun one. And I liked the Golem one too. It's kind of it's one of my favorites, but it's an underrated favorite because it's layered. It's a very layered story. That was one of the more psychologically horror ones. And it's a pretty horror story. There's a horrific story, and there's a lot to unpack there. So It's not like right on the surface where you can really tell what's going on, and you can kind of just look at the art and go, "Yeah, this is right in your face." You got to kind of think about it, and you got to digest it a little bit.
This is going to be interesting if you're going to work with Luke on, say, like a whole issue story, because you've done mostly short stories.
With Hollow Testament, it's going to be kind of the same format as a regular Modern Testament book, all short stories.
Okay, and it's going to focus on her as opposed to, say, other characters? Or is that asking too much?
I'm going to say it's a mix. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a mix. She's definitely the star, mm-hmm. but the other characters that are in there, it's her interactions with them, her how she deals with them, mm-hmm. which is the main focus of the story. So I would say it's about half and half as far as Hollow Girl being the star and the other characters in the stories sharing that spotlight with her.
Are these new characters, or are these characters we're going to recognize from Modern Testament?
These will be completely new characters. The characters are Joan the Divine, which is Luke's story. It's his take on the character John the Divine, who is cursed to see terrible premonitions of the future, terrible visions of tragedy. So Joan the Divine is one. And then I wrote two stories. One is featuring Cain, of Cain and Abel, the world's first murderer, which Hollow Girl has. I thought that was pretty cool that Hollow Girl is a killer, and she doesn't like people who kills, and she's going to be interacting with the world's first. So it was kind of cool how to see that happen.
I guess we need to get the book to know exactly how this is going to work. It sounds like there's going to be some time hopping. As far as this goes, there's probably a setup for those kinds of things, or things are going to come to her, maybe.
I can tell you that they're sticking with the theme of Modern Testament. They're all going to be in the modern world. Mm-hmm. Her world, kind of city, as far as cityscape, as far as it's concerned. But they're the same. They're all isolated stories, like one shots, really quick stories that are kind of separate from the main Hollow Girl continuity. Mm-hmm. And the last one is I have kind of a. It's not really a biblical being, I would say, but it's kind of in the same realm as it. I got a Grim Reaper like character, which I'm calling Death, personification of Death, which is separate from the Horseman of Death,
right? Which we've seen already.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Now, knowing you, you probably got other projects coming along as well. Is there anything else that you're working on that's going to come? And are you going to do something separate from Modern Testament? Or are you going to do more in the Modern Testament universe?
I think I got a couple other crossovers that are in the works that are in the early stages of getting put together with other creators that I don't want to go into right now because they're still developing. And I got other comics that I'm putting together that are still developing as well. So I'm always kind of working on something, but nothing that's kind of at the forefront that's ready to come out.
Anthologies or full comics?
Full comics.
Oh.
Modern Testament stuff is always going to be an anthology. They're always going to be short stories. But I got any other series that I'm working on besides that is going to kind of be a full page.
Are you like going shopping it around, or are you going to, you know, because since Zane's not there anymore, are you going to Kickstarter them? How are you going to go forward with these?
Again, I don't have any plans. I'm kind of going to see how things play out and then make a decision. When it gets down to the wire, nothing is really at that point yet where I want to put together a pitch and kind of bring it in front of publishers or make the decision to kind of put it out there myself. But anything's on the table at this point.
Oh, cool. I'm
more concerned with making comics rather than publishing.
Okay. Which leads me to something I want to bring up. And I always call them afterwards and the stuff. You have a paragraph in there that I think is really interesting. And then let me go ahead and read it. And I want you to get your elaboration on some of the parts. It says, "This project has been my introduction into the world of comics and shown me exactly what makes this medium so special. It's not the varied art that can range from the realistic to the bizarre. It's not the characters that can be more diverse than there are people on the planet. It's not even the stories that can inspire us, scare us, or make us laugh. It's the creators, the everyday people that come together to create something beautiful or terrifying. Comics are a collaborative endeavor. They can't exist without a community. And Modern Testament has taught me just how strong that community can be." Do you want to elaborate a little more on that?
Sure. As a comic reader, it's hard to... I don't want to say it's hard, but you don't really think about the people behind the books. And comic creating is so... I don't want to say difficult, but it's very, very time consuming. And when you, if you have no interest in creating comics, if you're just a casual comic reader and you pick up a comic and you sit down and it takes you anywhere between 10 and 20 minutes to consume it, it might have taken that somebody a year to put that thing together or more. Mm-hmm. And every single page, there's so much work that goes onto it. And there's an understanding within the comic creators community. They know how much work goes into a book, and it's kind of like we're in the trenches together making these things. So there's something only a comic creator can understand of another comic creator, that it's a real labor of love, and you put a lot of work into it, and you put a lot of time into it, and you share that, and you need to feed off each other's ideas and each other's art and each other's work. And I never really understood that until I started putting Modern Testament together, which in and of itself, even the product itself that I've created, that knowledge of that this comic creating community is so out there and it's tight knit, and it's been a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Like when you go to cons and stuff like that, people who are on the other side of the table, say from the creators, they don't understand there's a lot of interaction going on between the creators at these conventions. You know, they get to talk with the fans, and that's an important thing, but they also get to talk with each other, and that causes a lot of stuff.
Yeah, that's another big thing about Comic-Cons. People say, okay, it's great that I get to go see this creator and I finally get to shake their hand and have them sign my book. And they're not just there to meet you. They're also there to see all their other friends that they've been talking to online, that they've been working with, and they get this. So it's a convention is a two-sided thing. It's not just about creators meeting fans. It's about creators hanging out with other creators. Mm-hmm. And also fans hanging out with other fans, too. Mm-hmm.
And pitches often go on. The great story of Jeff Johns, he was at Baltimore Comic Con and Dan DiDio was there from DC. And he pitched to him about bringing back Green Lantern. Mm-hmm. And it was from that convention that the whole Green Lantern, Jeff Johns, experience came. And it was interesting that happened at Baltimore behind the scenes. You know, people who went to Baltimore had no idea that was even going on.
Yeah, you see that a lot about after cons. People might go out for dinner or go out for drinks, and then it's inevitable to start talking shop, and who knows what can arise from that.
Mm-hmm. I have to say one thing that this resembles to me also is because I like to sing. I sing in a choir. And the choir, if you know, you get up and you perform at once, and the audience might get something out of it, but they don't get as much as the choir does because they're busy rehearsing and understanding the piece and getting to know it so they can present it properly.
Yeah, it's a little tough to appreciate your own work and your own whatever you put out there, because when you're reading a comic, you are so intricately involved in its creation that you pick out every single little detail that should have been changed, every single little mistake that nobody will ever notice but you. He's like, I shouldn't have done that. I should have arranged this lettering balloon a little differently, or that her hand is positioned in the wrong way, and nobody cares, but...
But you know.
Yeah, you'll always know.
That's the thing. I also like the cover collection at the end, which I enjoyed. There's, some of the ones were really great. My favorite one, of course, I think is just great, is the one with the Ziz in it.
Yeah, that was the pinup or the cover?
Oh, I think it's the pinup. Maybe these are pinups at the back of the book.
They're both. I took all the volumes, all the individual stories that had their own covers. I put those in there as well as the pinups that were featured in the back. So the pinups were always kind of fun and goofy, and they were designed to make you laugh. So the Ziz cover is just the Ziz flying, mm-hmm. and the Ziz pinup is kind of it doing a little Disco Fever like John Travolta.
Okay, yeah. I also like the one with the Antichrist in an Uncle Sam position.
That was Steve Pinella did that. He's another, it's a former Insane creator. He did Faith Fallon, which I thought was a lot of fun. Uncle Antichrist, I call it.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of good stuff on this, and I'm just, you know, I'm sure you're anxious for this to get out in people's hands so they can actually start to read it and get a hold of it and stuff like that. Are they available in any of the local stores near where you live?
No, not currently. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now I've consolidated everything since Insane went down. So, I have it right now. The Kickstarter is really the main place to get it.
Okay. So to get to the Kickstarter, we go to Modern Testament.
The URL, moderntestamentkickstarter.com. Very simple, very clean, very neat. We'll take you right there. And I got a whole bunch of different reward tiers for you to choose from.
Now, what about your website? Because you were talking about, let's make sure we get everybody to on that. As far as the where they can go to buy the book, you said your website?
My website is franktherwriter.com. And when the campaign ends at the end of August, I'm going to be working to put all of the Modern Testament books up there.
Okay. What about Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that?
Facebook, you can find my author page at facebook.com/FrankTheWriter. Frank Martin Writer. I'm sorry, facebook.com/FrankMartinWriter. Mm-hmm. But all my Twitter handle and my Instagram handle is at FrankTheWriter. So mm-hmm. That's where you can find me.
Is any one place you prefer or that gets the best news?
I would say I try to – you can find me on Twitter or Facebook is very good too. I post probably the most on Facebook. But if it's important and it's going on Facebook, it's going on Twitter too.
Okay. So you're pretty thorough in all those good things.
I try to be.
So sometime when we find out what else it is that you're working on, we'll have to talk again so we can talk about that. I've enjoyed the Modern Testament experience. It's been kind of interesting because every time a volume came out, I think I got to talk with you about that particular volume.
We definitely had a bunch of chats.
Yeah, which was great. And that's rare. I don't get to talk with everybody, about their stuff all the time. But to get to go through that experience, it was almost like I was getting to share the experience with you and to go through the new stuff and the different stories and how well it worked out. And, finding artists to work with and the way that you would write them and stuff. And I always love the surprises and things like that. So I think you've got a strong basis on which to move forward and do other stuff. So I think Modern Testament, this was when I read that was your first story. And I remember when you and I talked about it back in the beginning about this, I was, honestly shocked that this was your first time creating a comic because it hangs together so well, especially with anthologies. Anthologies are tough. And yet you brought the whole thing together and it came together so nicely and there was a lot of variety in there and I love variety and the different stories are different from each other. So I think, you've done a good job of laying the groundwork for doing quote unquote regular comics, full story stuff.
That, Wayne. Thank you.
Yeah, so I wish you much more success. I'm sure the Kickstarter will be a success too. I can't wait to see how that. I'll have to go out there when we get done talking and jump on the bandwagon and get that thing going because I really want to support it and get these good things and maybe get a copy of it too.
I appreciate that, Wayne.
Because it's good stuff. And, when something else comes up, please let me know and we'll have to talk again because it's always good to chat with you about the comics themselves and about what you're doing. Because you have a lot of insight into what's happening.
Be my pleasure. Absolutely. I'll let you know about anything that's coming up.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Until next time, keep reading your comics. We'll be right back.